Okay, welcome back to the Holocaust Talk. It's been a while. Finally. You would have gotten a few more votes in to the survey, you know, maybe it would have done better. Okay. The title's in English. So, yes. The question I want to deal with is a question that is practical, and that is the question about visiting Germany. I don't single out Germany in any way. This could just as easily be Ukraine. It could just as easily be Poland, right? Just, you know, if you have to pick a country in the Holocaust, Germany's always a good choice. We understand that obviously this is something that people have very strong feelings about, but what we like to try to deal with is halachically, is there a source that we point one way or the other? We start with a pasuk in Parshas Bishalach. The pasuk on the face of it has nothing to do with this whatsoever. The pasuk talks about that as Bnei Yisrael are getting ready to cross through the Yam Suf, Moshe turns to them and says, "Vayomer Moshe Alam, Al Tiru, His Yatsu Ruas Yeshuas Hashem, Asher Yaseh Lachem Ayom, Ki Ek Asher Re'isem Et Metram Ayom, Rosifu Lerosem Od Ad Olam." Do not fear these Egyptians that are chasing after you. After today, you're never going to see them again. Right? That seems to be a pep talk. It seems to be a promise, a guarantee, a blessing that don't worry, this is the end of it. Once, right now, they're chasing you. Right now, you have reason to be nervous. But going forward, we're going to be done with them. However, if you look at the Yerushalmi in Sukkah, it takes it a little differently. The Yerushalmi quotes Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that says, there are three times in the Torah that we were warned that we should never go back to Egypt. And the first one is here, Shinamar, Ki Asheri Isa Mitzrayim Hayom, Gososivim Rosam Odal Alom. Not reading it as we read it originally. The simple reading was, don't worry about it, but it's a command. Right? Take a good look at Egypt because you're never going back. Right? Meaning that you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. Two other proof texts, right? That says, Vashem Omar Lachem Gososivim Lashim Derech Hazeod. That's more straightforward. Hashem said, don't ever go back this way. And then finally, in the Tochacha, at the end of Parshas Kitavo, it's going to say, Ve'yishivcha Hashem Mitzrayim ba'anios, as a threat. Now, if you don't behave, you said, God's going to put you on boats and send you back to Egypt. So there seem to be three sources that the Yerushalmi says that, in fact, a person is not allowed to go back to Egypt. That there is a place on this globe where Jews are not supposed to be. The Rambam codifies this and he writes, you can live wherever you want in the world. Chutz me'aretz Mitzrayim. We'll get there. Duly noted. Surprising, isn't it? Right? So we're going to spend a fair amount of time trying to understand the Rambam's plight. And he says, he says, any place in the world, but don't move it next to me. You can't live in Mitzrayim. Min hayam hagadol v'marav arba me'az parsa, arba is parsa, k'neged eretz kush, k'neged amidbar. It's explaining where exactly Egypt is. So it's on the Mediterranean coast. This is the size of it. North of Ethiopia, by the desert. Hakol also is yashim, but you're not allowed to live there. B'shroshim makomos yizhira tor shlo roshim Mitzrayim. There's three times, he says, and then he quotes the three psukim from the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is clearly his source. However, he says in the next halacha, muta lachzor eretz Mitzrayim l'sforo pragmatia. You can go on a business trip there. Olichvosh aratzos acheros. And you can also go and capture lands. Then also l'shtakeyashon. But you can't become a citizen of Egypt again. You wouldn't get lashes if you actually did this. Right? Because when you go in, you could just be visiting. And if you want to stay, just your thoughts don't make a difference. Now he says a chiddush. What if Israel would invade Egypt and capture it? Right, 1973, Ariel Sharon was on the other side of the Suez Canal. He had a clean shot at Cairo. What if he would have gone for it and planted an Israeli flag right in Cairo? Then what? Would you still not be allowed to live there, or would it actually become part of Israel? That would be allowed, just individuals can't live in Egypt. Now the Rambam says, why not? Because they are the most corrupt of all nations. Cannot live there. In the event Israel would take over and would become part of Israel, it would become a suburb of Eilat and the like, right? Then it would be okie-dokie karaoke because it's Israel. But as long as it's Egypt, you can't live there because they're bad people. The Radvaz raises this question. He says, wait a second. There are a lot of fine people, Jews, who live in Egypt. Want to give an example? Want to give another example?
Rambam.
Right? Correct, Dr. Geller? The Radvaz. Right, the Radvaz himself, who's writing this, also lived for 40 years in Egypt. So he writes, he said, what is this based on that people are still living in Egypt? He said, so some people say you're only not allowed to live in Egypt if you move there from Israel. But if I would move there hypothetically from Spain, then that would be okay. The Radvaz rejects that. The Ein Zeh Tam Maspik doesn't work. Yeah, according to one of the psukim that says you can't travel this way again, yes. What about the other ones that you can never see it again? That doesn't fit in. Correct. That's exactly what we say. That when Yaakov first went there, he had no intention of taking upon citizenships of Egypt. He was just passing through. Got a little bit of a problem with the food. Famine will blow over. They'll find a vaccine. We'll all go back to our normal lives. He was about to go back. So it says that's fine. You want to go there temporarily. You're on shlichut. That would be okay. It's only a problem if you actually live there permanently, become a permanent resident.
Is using the term seemingly,
right. So he's assuming that you're going to live there and set down your roots. Says Yeshiva Iatachoze Avatachoze Rishora Pragmatia. The Rechiba Sharis called Yordan Trilo Yodrishtakea El Rishora. He said, it could be that all the people who moved down there, they never planned on staying. Alpha Gavachat Nishtaku, Ein Kan Rav El Isura Ba'alma. He said, so they're there, it's bad, but it's not really the same issue. There was no place else for them to make a parnasa, and it's very hard to travel. That's why they ended up staying. So then the vine says, okay, you tell me, tikshu rabbeinu, sharei nishtaka baretz. But wait a second. The Rambam, I'm a commentary on the Rambam. The Rambam said this. He lived there permanently. Yesh lomu da'anus hayim. Al-pi malchus. Shehayu rofil malchus asarim. He got stuck. They hired him to work for the government. He was the chief medical director of the Sultan or whoever was in charge there. And then they never let him leave. Poor guy. He said, in fact, v'gamaninis yashati sham zman maruba. He said, I also, The Radvaz was there for some time. Lomo Torah Lamda. Except Yeshiva Kavati Shem Yeshiva Ki I Gav the Mutav Shuv Basi Yerushalayim. You know, I was there as long as I could take care of what I wanted to. You know, I ran the yeshiva. I was helpful for the Jewish community. Then I moved back to Yerushalayim. So he says that the Rambam, he just couldn't get out. Rav Herzog writes about this. And he, in fact, builds on this a little bit more. He says, let's go through the biography of the Rambam. If you remember, the Rambam was supported by his brother. His brother had gone to India carrying precious gems. And there was trade relations between India and Egypt. So his brother was in India. He was in Egypt. This was a temporary business thing. He's going to make his fortune, and then he wouldn't have to work anymore. He could sit and learn. So unfortunately, his brother died in a shipwreck. And with that, he was stuck. There went his parnasa. Now he had to go become a doctor for a living. So the Rambam, when he first came down, he came down for a business deal. So when he entered, there was no Isser involved. And once he got stuck there, he got stuck there. So again, the idea here is that the Rambam never really wanted to be living in Egypt. He never officially moved there. He was just there for a while. There are, however, other answers out there. The Ritva, in his Perish on Yuma, offers several other approaches. He says, "Tmiya milsa basamcha olam logo b'zman hazeh b'mitzrayim could go in Harambam zal." He said, "How are so many people still living? How is there a Jewish community in Egypt? And what was the Rambam doing there?" "V'kam gedolim acherim." It's not just the Rambam. We said the Radvaz. There were other ones as well. The first one is, well, maybe you couldn't live in Egyptian cities, but those were long destroyed since the Torah. And these cities are new cities. They don't count. Another suggestion we heard earlier, which was rejected by the Radbaz, was that it's only if he traveled from Israel. The Hakhsiv Krag also Sivon Shubadar Chazeod. Sivanochim Yosheshaino Isahu El Bizman Shisrael Shrui Malad Mosam. Another possibility, he says, it's only, you only can't live in Egypt when you could be right next door living in Israel. Ozman Hazesh and Nigzar Leno Leos Nidachim, the Fog Kits Veharetz, Kokhutz Laos Echadu. But once you're out there, what's the difference? I'm going to live in Egypt, I'm going to live in Babylon, I'm going to live in France. It's all the same. So these are all answers that are suggested. Most interestingly is the Kaftar V'Ferach. The Kaftar V'Ferach was written, I believe, in the 14th century. It discusses the travels that a person had in, a rabbi had in Egypt, and he retells the following well-known story. Same idea, three psukim. He says, Shamati b'mitzrayim. He said, when I was in Egypt, I heard mipi Rav Shmuel zal, Ech b'nei bonov shal haram b'mazel. Who's the Ram b'mazel? The Rambam zal, right. He said, I heard from one of the Rambam's descendants, Yishei haRambam zal, ha'yachosim shmo b'igeres, shlucho ha'yamisayim. When he was signed the letter, he would write at the end, signed off the fellow who does three Averas every single day, your pal the Rambam. What? It means that the Rambam himself wrote, when he would sign the letter, he would write that what I'm doing here is wrong. So that was his name. Right, that wasn't. based on this, Rav Eliashiv writes, he said, people want to know, how come the Rambam, what was his heter to live there? He said, I'll tell you what his heter was. He had no heter. Don't say, what was he thinking? He tells you when he signed the letter. He lived there for a long time. They offered all these suggestions. Said the Rambam told you the answer. He knew it was Asr, but he couldn't get out. It bothered him, but he was stuck. The king of Egypt wouldn't let him out. So Yashim says, the answer is, no, there is no heter. There is no reason why you're allowed to live there. But what was the Rambam going to do? He got stuck. The government wouldn't let him leave. He didn't have a choice. Now, with that in mind, there's a basic question. And the question is, what is the reason that the Torah doesn't want us living in Egypt? So far, we've only really seen one suggestion for a Tama Mitzvah, and that was the Rambam himself. The Rambam suggested that they're bad people. Now, if you go and you follow that argument, that opens up the door to another answer. And that being, so the Egyptians at the time of the Torah were really bad people. You know, it's been a few years since then. There's been some turnover, right? People have moved out. New people have moved in. So if you tell me there's something wrong with the land, for whatever reason, this real estate has a certain level of impurity in it, and you cannot set foot, I get that. That hasn't changed. But if you tell me these are rotten people, okay. Time moves on. So Rabbeinu Bachye Ibn Pakuda, in his Parish on the Torah, writes, the second of the three psukim. Zu mitzvah l'shah. He said, this is only a temporary commandment. That here, they were bad people. You just said, don't go back. That's a bad neighborhood. You don't want to be living there. They were known as terrible people. But he says, but in fact, this mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. It's quite a chiddush that he says. He says, if you tell me that the land was somehow terrible, you got to avoid that geography, fine, I get it. But he says, no, it's the people, which the Rambam himself sort of said. He said, and if that's the case, it expired, because the people expired. You see, a lot of people live there now. Why would anyone be living there if this applied? People would have gotten up and complained about it. Some people say that answer. That was Rebbe Elazar Mamitz. He's not excited. That's a Gemara in Sukkah. That's in fact the Gemara we're talking about. That they had this huge base. They had this huge shul there. With hundreds of thousands, they had the flags, you know, the unnamed flags, etc. And God wasn't happy and destroyed the place. And everyone was killed. Not the happiest of endings. What? Boy, this is great. I assume that's what they were thinking. So the bottom line is Rabbeinu Bachya takes a very different approach. And Rabbeinu Bachya says, this isn't actually a mitzvah. Now, is there a problem with that opinion? He just wrote out one of the mitzvahs. It's not in the 613. So if you look at number 10 at Rav Herzog, right, so you know what we haven't seen on this Makara sheet yet, which is kind of important? The Shulchan Aruch. Does the Shulchan Aruch at any point say that you can't live in Egypt? So Rav Herzog points out that, you know what, the tour, the Shulchan Aruch, they never mention this mitzvah. And you want to know why they don't mention the mitzvah? What? Tours in Ashkenazi. Rambam's. You know, because they hold that Rabbeinu Bachya, he believes. And he believes that it's not a mitzvah. There's no problem whatsoever living in Egypt. You want to live in Egypt? Because in Tehit, go live in Egypt. Not a problem whatsoever. And in fact, halacha l'maisa, if you go and look at Rav Avadya Yosef, this goes to the, I'd say, around 1977, the Shuva was written. Why? Because, if you remember, first Sadat came to speak in the Knesset, and then Begin went to speak in Cairo. And the Frum newspapers asked, are we allowed to go? We go cover Begin's trip to Cairo, because after all, isn't it a violation of this? So Rav Avadya, who started off as a dayan in Egypt, says as follows, number 11, L'she'erat itonim datiyim, he mutal itonim miyisrael insoha mitzrayim kdei lamod mikarov v'daveach es almasa matam l'sholma b'diyo v'edas kahir. V'idas, sorry, kahir. Gives it, she says, bottom line, v'sikum mutal itonim miyisrael insoha mitzrayim v'daveach almasa matam l'sholma b'insoha mitzrayim. He writes on Shenishman this Masa Besoros Tovos Yeshuas Mechamos the Abba Kamos Haaretz Hashem Ozlam O Yitain Hashem Yevarach Zamo Basim. Right, so that's what he says. This is a no question. He says, you know, whether he can live there or not. He said, but to go down there just to cover a thing, for sure. That even the Rambam would say that's mutter. Now, if you think about it, on the one hand, the Rambam is holding what? The Rambam seems to be saying that it's a mitzvah adoros, right? He's very clear. We saw two halachas that this is long term, and perhaps, again, there's an argument. No one, as far as I know, has ever seen a letter that the Rambam has signed saying that here I am, the guy who does the averis, right? So there are people who argue that that story is baloney. You can't paskin based on it. Okay. But the bottom line is the Rambam holds it's a permanent mitzvah, which sounds like a chumrah. And the Tor Beis Yosef are saying that, no, actually, it was something that was relevant at the time. That's not a mitzvah l'doros. It's like v'hag b'l'asahah. It was a one and done. On the other hand, though, if you accept the idea, yes? I believe I'm not sure. Chinuch does not count there. Yes? There you have it. She thinks somebody counts it and somebody doesn't count it. Today, I am a woman. Oh, okay, we're looking forward to your full report on it. Yes. Not so much interesting. So it's interesting that you raise that. It's interesting that you raise that because that's mentioned here. I did skim over it. The question is as follows. We believe in Jesus Sakata Bos Sancheriv Bilbel Asaumis. That's what Yossi is referring to. That meaning that at the time of the before the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, at the time that the 10 tribes go into exile, Sancheriv had a policy of resettlement. He would take communities and move them to a different geographical location. And it was a smart move. The idea being that if I come in as a foreign ruler in your land, you'll always want to get me out. But if I pick you up and I move you to some other land where you're a foreigner either way, you don't care who's ruling and you won't rebel. So therefore, Sancheriv mixed up everything. So based on that, for example, it says in the Torah that an Edomi can't convert. So what if an Italian comes forward today and says, I want to become Jewish? So we assume, I think we discussed this on a Thursday night. I don't remember what we served, but I think what we discussed at the time was the idea that the Italians ain't what they used to be. Right? That Sanchev is Bilbo El Sumas. However, we also mentioned at the time there is a pasuk in Yechezkel, which is quoted by the Mordechai, which says that the Egyptians actually went back afterwards. Egypt is the one country that actually went back, and the Egyptians are still the Egyptians. That's why that's a tricky one. The Egyptians are the one tricky country when it comes to this. Well, again, they might be descendants. It's definitely not the same ones. Could they be? Because, I mean, unless you live in a UN refugee camp, you can't live that long for thousands of years. Right? No, they're different people. They might be descendants. My great grandparents might have been much better and much worse than me. We're different people. Yes, Marsha. So again, I what were they? They were French?
I don't know.
So. Yeah, but they were okay. They're Philistines. I don't know. I think we're off topic. So we're going to go back to here now. Now, the reason this discussion is so important is if you're telling me that what the Rabbeinu Bachya seems to be saying, which is it's not a matter of there's no place on earth that we should not be going, but there are people that we should be avoiding in the event that a really, really bad bunch showed up again at another point in history. Based on this, we should avoid them as well. This became a serious question in Spain around 1492. So let's move over historically. And again, Rav Avadya in the Abia Omer this time, number 12. The question is as follows. He said, there is a rumor. He said, "B'davar hashmua shebishasha garshu v'hugu Yehudei Sfarad misham," by the time when 1492, when the Jews of Spain were expelled, "Kibu aleim v'gozu b'chayim shalom roshim ol adam Sfarad." He said, no one should ever move back to Spain. The problem is, "Avalo matzon u'davar zeh b'svarim." But there's no place where this is written. There is no source for this. All you have here is a rumor. And even if they said that, maybe they said, we're never going to come back. Were they really able to say that no one could ever go back to Spain again? And then they said that maybe it means that you can only not live there, but maybe you could pass through, maybe you can get buy yourself a nice bottle of wine, something like that. So then he tells story. He says, Agrim Toledano. Rabbi Toledano was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv at the time. The Sefer Ner Marav, Kasav Avosenu Sipruvado. He said, we have a tradition. This is a fascinating nugget of information. Kibunei Mishpachas Toledano. Right? Toledano is a well-known Sephardi name. Right? What? From Toledo. Right. But why are they called Toledano? So this is interesting. This you want to guess. Your motzi meir Toledo. They come from Toledo. Not to be confused with Toledo mud hens. Asher Besfard. That is in Spain. The Gazu Chayim al Atzman. They accepted a Chayim on himself. Lagilti Shuv over Besfard. That they, their family will never go back to Spain. Therefore, come him Toledano. Come Toledo? No. Besef Besfard. That's exactly what he said. That's where the word Toledano comes. Toledo? No. Didn't know that, huh? So you have this idea out there that this, the idea of not going back to a country that was particularly nasty to us, right? Not only does it apply in the time of Egypt, but it carries over to the Spanish Inquisition. We'll discuss that. There's a nice little place in the Antarctica where they haven't met us yet. Well, again, because they're very bad people, we said. Right. That, therefore not. But therefore, if there's another group of really bad people, we don't go back to them either. Again, according to the opinion of Rabbeinu Bachya, we don't go back to places, right? We don't go back to Egypt because they were the worst people, right? And therefore, if some other group, it would the logical follow, reaches the level of the worst people, we're not going there either. Toledo? No. That's it. That was the idea. The question that was raised to Avadi Yosef is this for real? On the one hand, there is this Kolodol Pasuk, this rumor out there that there was a cherem that no one can go to Spain, but it's never written anywhere. Like, there's no source for it that we can sit there and analyze the text, because there is no text. The Tzitz Eliezer has asked the same question regarding Spain. There is this idea that's been passed on from generation to generation. Sefer Rav Avadya says, yes, I've heard the rumors. No, I never read the book. It doesn't exist. And every so often, the rabbis try to say, what's the source for this? The Katzar Yad Mahasik, they come up with nothing. Gam Kosvei told us Yisrael, Eidam Maskir Mikach. The history books never mention that there was such a cherem. Umafri Adav B'miyuchad Ashar Barbanel HaYerosh HaGolem HaHem. The Abarbanel was alive at the time. Why didn't he write that we left and we ain't ever coming back? He writes extensively about it, what happened at the time. He talks about being chased out. He talks about leaving. He talks about before. He never mentioned this. If it really happened, how come he didn't write it? Look at all these places, all the history books, halachic books from the time. Nobody writes anything. So he says, finally, B'shel Yaakov, my cousin, Risha Letzion, a Rav Rashi Yisrael, a Gomer Ben Zion, a Uziel, Shlita. No longer. He says, so finally, I read it to the chief rabbi of the time, was the first Sephardi chief rabbi, Rav Uziel, and I said to him, what's the bottom line? What's going on? He said, is there any source for this? Hey, Shlisha, Amnam, Ein Shum Makar Lekach. No, there is no book that writes this. There is a strong tradition among the Svaradim, don't do it. And in fact, he writes, there are very few Israeli Svaradim living in, there are Jewish Svaradim living in Spain at this point. Every so often, though, the small Sephardi community says, can you please send us a Rebbe, a rabbi from Israel, to help us out here? We don't send. That Israel will not send a shliach to Spain. So he writes, based on this, I wouldn't go to Spain. That is the opinion of the Tzitz Eliezer.
Hearing that it was a cherem, and that it would expire
1990. So that is probably a confusion based on the opinion that Chachamim Rabbeinu Gershom was for 1,000 years. But it's hard to imagine this is there is no written source for it. Rav Avadya Yosef was then approached and asked to go to Spain himself. What? We'll see in a moment. What a lucky guess. They said maskara. Yeah. A cherem. A cherem. An excommunication. Whoever do will be excommunicated. Don't. From everything. That's it. That's it, Marcia. No more aliyahs for you. So again, Rav Avadya, however, was not moved by this argument. I don't know if there ever was an excommunication, and if it was, it was probably only for that generation. And even if there was, they could only accept it on themselves. So they didn't do it on the whole world. And even if you're doing that, it can't be worse than Mitzrayim. You can visit still, you can't live there. He said, Hilka Chasisi Maisa Vikarti be Madrid Birat Svard. Therefore I went to visit Madrid, he said. V'chanachti as beis ha-sefer Yehudi v'makam. And I went and I dedicated the new yeshiva. V'hemshech ha-bika huzmanti remel ha-svard. And the king of Spain invited me over. Ashechok lanu kovod gadol. Treated us mighty nice. V'nasa lanu matani yekam matkes. Gave us a nice gift for coming. And a nice door prize. V'yehudi svard ha-sa simcha gadola. And it was a great joy for the Jews of Spain that day. Ki rama karnal of ne'amim, because they were lifted in the eyes of the nations. Hashem yisbar, he is akeinu kapa p'nei yeshia tzikeinu b'karov, malar da'as Hashem, avadya Yosef, roshan l'tziyam l'arav rashid Yisrael. He signs off. And in fact, I gave you then the article that came along with that in English, I say. Where it talks about the fact that Rav Avadya was the first who came to dedicate the first Jewish school in Spain since 1492, right? Israeli religious attached great significance to Yosef. It explains it would meant an annulment of the Chayra de Rabbanan, the boy of the Spain declared by the rabbis in the Inquisition era. That's not actually true. He did not nullify it. He just said it never happened, which is a little bit different. There are presently three, this is again 1977. At the time, there were 9,000 Jews, 3,000 of them in Madrid. Okay, that's Spain. Let's go. Let's jump another 450 years. Let's get to Nazi Germany. Do we apply the same rules that a person cannot go back to Germany? Germans were a pretty nasty bunch, those Nazis. If in terms of qualifying being nasty enough, I think they did it in spades. The Poles, I would be happy to throw in most of Eastern Europe with this. So the question is, what do we do about this?
Do you mean
to live and stay there permanently? Well,
let's see both. Do you mean to do business there?
Yes.
Do you mean to visit?
Yes. All. That's the question. So the question is, again, given after what happened in Egypt and what happened in Spain, right? The question is, do we take it one step beyond, right? The next historical point where it would seem to be a possibility. So after 1945, this was raised as a possibility, right? Should again, it's a question whether they did this or not during the time of the Inquisition, but should we do it, you know, in response to what Germany and perhaps other countries did to us as well? He said there was a convention where rabbis got together to discuss this question. I think this was written in 1951. Is according to this, also, Yerachol Yehudi Ladroch al Admas Germania. That this would make it prohibited for any Jew to walk on German soil. And many rabbis agreed to this. On the Misara Ashkofa Politis, Gionis, Mersorishis, Sodekis Bohatzozo. He says, politically, he says, I think there's a good point here. With the cruelty that they showed, the worst in the history of mankind. And even without this, nobody in 1951 was itching to go back to Germany. I still have what to say. So there are two reasons why I think it would be wrong to do this. One, what gives us the right to make up new rules against every Jew in the world? So I don't think we have the power. A. So the first one is we can't. The second one is we shouldn't. Tam sheni yesh b'minias gezeres cherem zu mitzad adin. V'sechas avod azor avod b'kam akos v'gemor nemar she'en gozing gezer al tziva el imke rov atziva yochol amod bo. You're only allowed to make a rule that people could live with. Rav nechon ha'shmu azu ein raya mikan ki migorsh. He said, but what about Spain? Didn't they do this in Spain? So first he says, I'm not so sure they did anything in Spain, as we said. He said, in those people, in the time of the Spanish Inquisition, they can say, we will never go back. They can say, the Jews of Spain should never go back. But how can you get up and announce that the entire Jewish people can't do this? Bottom line is people are back in Spain. That didn't work if it existed. The bottom line is people are going to end up moving back to Germany at some point. Why are we going to make it awesome? So therefore, he said, well, personally, I don't know I'd want to go there. Now, what's interesting is this idea really comes from many years beforehand. If you look at the Sefer Chassidim had a surprisingly similar question. It says, "Be'er achas hayasara." There was a bad fellow in the city, whoever the head, the mayor, whatever it was. V'ayir rotz alav yehudim shebi'er min adas. Baruch hu v'amru kiras ligzor chayim shalom yodo yehudi od be'er la'olam. They wanted them to all leave Judaism, so they all ran away, and they wanted to say, no one's ever allowed to live in that city again. Why are you making trouble for the later generations? As long as this guy's alive, you can't live there. So keep in mind that, you know, it's got to be reasonable. You can't just write off part of the globe and say you can't ever live there. Similarly, the Sri Dei Eish asked the question, he happens to be the Shoel in this question, it's in his Tshuvas, about whether or not we should make this idea that no one should ever go to Germany. So the person responds the way that we had said earlier, it was raised. He says, I don't think we can. Yeah, let's be serious. But how about going to Saul, Mitzarfus, Anglia? France and England, how did they treat us? We just had Tisha B'Av. We just had the kinos for the people for the Crusades. What happened to us in France and Germany? Right? We didn't get up and say, now no one can ever live in France or Germany. She said, Puzzle, Yishav, Mibnei, Saul, Medias, Halo, Meir, Shana, Racha, Chazraleim. Yeah, there were, until the time of Oliver Cromwell, right? There's a few good 100 years we didn't live in England. But then we went back. Why should Spain be different than England and France? And why should Germany be different than Spain, England, and France? Yeah, so the point being here is, yeah, perhaps for some time we shouldn't go back there, right? right? As long as those people are alive in their country, right? Just like by Egypt, but maybe then we shouldn't go back. But as the saying goes, 100 years later, all new people. Similarly, there is a piece written which really had a very different idea from a fellow of Aryeh Lev Spitz. It was written in the journal Hamaor. Interestingly, by the way, at the end of this article, the editor found it necessary to say, let me tell you who this author is, so you don't think he's nuts. So let's see what he said. He said it's now 36 years after the war, 81. We should set up a day on the calendar for the Holocaust. We should all get up and we should publicly swear we'll never forget what happened. And we should also say that no Jew should ever, ever set their foot again in these places. And we should treat it like Tisha B'Av. The fact that any Jew is living in Germany is an embarrassment to the people who were killed. The blood is still warm and there are firm people that live in Germany. So this is a different approach. He says there might not be an Isser, but we sure is definitely shouldn't be living there. He thinks that it was up to him. We should get together and come up with a statement that nobody lives there. And they're right. Not that we support it. Now, yes. So, correct. Well, that's the question. That's the question. On the one hand, yes, it has educational value. On the other hand, it's big business for them. What was it that Marvin Heyer famously said? There's no a business like show a business. You know? And that's a question. You know, should they be getting a nickel of our money? Should they be making a profit off of these camps? Lev Yehuda was written during the war. He said, don't ever buy German products. Mechonos, salonios, not cars, not cameras. Sami Mirkadova, don't buy medicines. Don't go to the baths in Germany. He said, if every Jew would boycott Germany, it would hurt them. And should hurt them until any last bit of Nazism is gone. So therefore, he thinks that absolutely, not only shouldn't you travel there, you should not give them any business. Rabbi Yonman Zilber, again, he passed away around 10 years ago, Sefer Oz Nidru. Ma'anel ha-mechtev shin eskabel tomorrow, I'm responding to the letter I got yesterday. Ein shum isser v'chem l'knos totsos germania, yosem ishar goyim. There's nothing wrong with buying, halachically you could buy German. However, you'll say, aye, but in Spain they made an extra communication. Even if that's true, they never made one on Germany. And even the one in Spain, they've just said not to buy Spanish products. Don't stop making up rules. You don't want to buy German, that's fine. Don't say it's a halacha, he said. Yes, there's reason not to. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, he said, but there's no halachic reason. The last two tshuvas I give you are very interesting. I happen to think they're very. I cut them down to fit the page, but these are both by Rav Shlomo Aviner. Rav Aviner lives in Yerushalayim, definitely a leader in the modern Orthodox movement. The first quote is Yadet in Talyan. How do we translate that? To become friendly with the hangman. That's what he called this tshuva. Kinon yechasim shim Germania. Nim lecho atzar benumas v'shakol v'takim v'agruti. Said he wants to tell you something about Israeli's relationship with Germany. And he says that, you know, there's definitely political value to be friendly with Germany. Correct. Again, we discussed this when we discussed reparations, right? So this is not unrelated to that. On the other hand, this is Germany. He said, do you really think, after what they've done to us, we should be friends with them? He said, I don't believe that there ever was one at the time of the Inquisition. But you want to know why? Because no one in their right mind was going to pick up and go back to Spain. After the Inquisition, all better now? He said there was never a need to get up and make a statement. Because who would ever go back? Ain Shem Yehudim, but Tuchim Shol Yair Oda Shem Yehudi. My bit wrote, there's no Jews left in Spain, and for as far as I'm concerned, no one should ever go back. Who's going to go back? But nowadays, everything's different. After the Holocaust, we're ready to be friendly with them. 500 years ago, no one would have thought of this. Hey, we're cultured. Germany's so cultured, of course we should be friends. They have beautiful orchestras and symphonies they write. They have wonderful philosophy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we hung out with the Germans? This is very tongue-in-cheek, he's writing. Nishma Agdara, let me tell you my thoughts. Apam o yeronu yachasim tekinim im Germania. We should never have normal relations with Germany. Listen to what you're saying, he says. Said, okay, there'll be some relationship. Oh, that happened. Now everything's okay. We're going to send them our students and they'll send us their students. We'll have cultural exchanges. We're not going to forget, right? We'll go and we'll remember together. The person that was killed and the executioner. We'll hang out together. Yes.
He agreed there was nothing wrong with Germany before the Nazi era.
Yes.
And so it was a political movement that really changed the country. So they were restoring Gomorrah, I agree. But if the political status changes again, you can't blame the land. It's not the land. It's not the carcass.
Right. So you're saying it's the people. And therefore, just like you're saying, like Rabbeinu Bachya said, right? Going back to how we got here, right? We got here through Rabbeinu Bachya. But you're saying that if they're rotten people, you stay away from them. If they're not rotten people, but I think his argument is it's too soon. There are Nazis that are, there are still people living in Germany who killed Jews. Right? So, you know, I'm not
ready. In Argentina and the United States, though.
Correct. But, you know, they're hiding out there. It's a different story. He said, Nika Rabbi is molded. But his molded is Ita. Yeah, well, go, we'll consider it. We'll discuss it together, the issues. We're mature enough that we can sit together with the executioner. Why don't we go? Why with the beasts of the forest? Why don't we go and hang out with them? It'd be good for us. It's in the BBC. They're the strongest economy in all of Europe. So now we're going to sell our souls for money. We're going to sell out our national pride for money. So the bottom line is that Rav Aviner says, yeah, he's right. He says, I agree. Halachically, there's nothing here. But that doesn't make it right. One last quick one. Again, this is just a smart. The question that he's asking, could she do not buy German products? So in part 7 of the truth, writes, he says, there's no halachic reason not to buy it. But there's definitely value to try to avoid it. Every individual makes their own decision. Do you want to spend your money on this or for something else? So the bottom line is, just try to sum it up a little bit, is that in terms of traveling to Germany, it is very, very, very difficult to say that there is a halachic problem with it. The bottom line is there never was a cherem, right? It's hard. It's not even believable that there was ever a cherem on any part of the world. The only thing is that there is a halacha regarding Egypt, and that might have been temporary. It might have been more permanent, but it definitely doesn't carry over. That being said, even though there are no halachic reasons to avoid it, there might be very strong philosophical reasons that we should consider avoiding Germany for at least a few decades, both in terms of visiting and giving them our business. Okay, thank you.